So as a church, we've been walking through, we've been studying the books of 1 and 2 Samuel, and we've entitled this series, God Will Establish the Refuge of His Kingdom for His People. And 1 and 2 Samuel cover a time in Israel's history that in many ways is tumultuous. We found last week that Israel had finally been given a king that they'd asked for, a king like the nations' kings that was around them. And we find that Israel's tumultuousness is marked by continuous threats from outside of their kingdom, by the Philistines and other enemies. But also, there's tumultuousness that's created by the people's own hearts as judges. I think chapter 17, verse 5, speaks about how the people did whatever was right in their own eyes. And so it's in the midst of that that God is working through unexpected people, like the prophet Samuel, like Hannah, and later we'll see David, who will become king, to establish for his people a refuge of his kingdom. And while we don't face the same threats that the people of Israel faced in 1 and 2 Samuel, we are certainly drawn to seeking refuge. We want security, right? We want refuge from things that most create fear in us. And I want to give us a chance to think about a question, reflect on this question, which is this. What's your natural response to situations that evoke fear or anxiousness? If you think about this past week, and you think about moments where you experience fear, you experience anxiousness, I want you to think about what was your natural response in that moment? Where did you look for refuge? How did you look for refuge? Oftentimes, I think that we can be drawn when we experience fear or anxiousness, we can be drawn to kind of find refuge by trying to control the person or the situation that's creating that anxiousness or that fear for us, right? And so we go into that mode of controlling things. Or for others of us, the response might be instead of controlling, it's actually to escape, where we just try to escape from whatever it is that's creating that anxiousness or creating that fear in us. And so most often that escape happens through our phones, right? Where we can escape simply by scrolling, or we can escape by streaming, or even we can escape by engaging in lust and sinning in that way. Or for others of us, we're not trying to control, we're not trying to escape, but we look to somebody else to be our refuge. So we become really dependent on that individual or that situation taking place in the way that we want it to take place. Now, in all of these scenarios, what we see is, the connecting piece is that in that moment, we are looking to ourselves or to someone else or to something to be our refuge. And as we look at 1 Samuel chapter 16 and 17, which records probably one of the most famous stories in the Bible, we're going to be reminded that there is only one true refuge, there is only one true deliverer who is the one true God, who is in control of all things, who cares for us. And the main idea of this sermon this morning is that when you are afraid, trust the Lord of hosts, for he will be your deliverer. When you are afraid, trust the Lord of hosts, for he will be your deliverer. Now, as I mentioned a moment ago, we studied last week, 1 Samuel chapter 9 through 15, which covered Saul becoming king and how he failed. He was disobedient to God in two significant moments, and Samuel told Saul that he'd lost the kingship because of his disobedience to God. And we come to chapter 16, and we see that Samuel is concerned. He's worried. He's grieved is the word that's used there in chapter 16, verse 1, because of all that's taking place with Saul. And God tells Samuel, he says, look, do not be grieved because I have chosen a new king for my people. And so I want you to go to Jesse, who is in Bethlehem, and I'm going to tell you once you get there which of his sons is going to be king. And as God gives Samuel these instructions, he also gives him some other interesting instructions. He tells him, when you go, bring a heifer with you, which is a young female cow that would be used as a sacrifice. He says, I want you to go there and to give a sacrifice and bring Jesse and his sons, tell them to come to the sacrifice. And the reason for these instructions was that if Saul found out that Samuel had come, and he was coming in his role as prophet to anoint a new king, he was going to try and kill Samuel. And so as a way of protecting Samuel, God gives Samuel these instructions that under the cloak of coming to sacrifice, you're going to then, I'm going to tell you who the next king is going to be, and you're going to anoint that king. And so he does this. He comes to Bethlehem. He gathers Jesse, and we find out that the elders of the city are actually a little concerned about why he's there. And he tells them, I'm here to sacrifice. And so they said, okay. And so Jesse's sons, he brings his boys with him, and they sacrifice this heifer. And after the sacrifice, or during the sacrifice, Samuel then asks Jesse to present his sons to him so that he can figure out who he should anoint to be the next king. And we find that the first one who steps up is the oldest son, Eliab. And I just want to say that the oldest sons are the best sons. I'm an oldest son, so I want to, you know, just point, is there any other oldest sons out here? Yeah, you understand. We understand. Oh, and yeah, and Sammy's back there. His hand is being raised by dad, right? The oldest sons are the best sons, right? And this is the natural assumption. Jesse's thinking, all right, my son, who's the oldest, he's got to be the one. And so he brings Eliab before Samuel. Samuel's response is actually, he's impressed by Eliab. And he's like, okay, God, this has got to be the one. It's got to be the guy. And I want us to look at God's response to Samuel in verse 7 of chapter 16. Notice what God says. He says this, "But the Lord said to Samuel, 'Do not look on his appearance or on the height of his stature, because I have rejected him. For the Lord sees not as man sees. Man looks on outward appearance, but the Lord looks on the heart.'" And it's a little bit ironic, isn't it? Because if you remember last week, when God gave the people what they asked for, which was a king like the nations around them, he gave them a king who was impressive. Saul, who was what? He was described in three ways. He was wealthy, he was taller, a head taller than everybody else, and he was handsome. And yet, what kind of kids, what kind of a king was Saul? Was Saul a good king or a bad king? You remember last? He's a bad king, right? He was a selfish king. He was a king that took. He was a king that was impatient. He was a king that really looked at God as being in the way of what he wanted to do. And Samuel was a part of all this, right? Because God was the one who, or Samuel was the one who God used to speak the judgments to Saul. And yet we see here where Samuel is kind of doing the same thing that the people of Israel did, going, this guy's impressive. He looks impressive. He should be king. And yet God reminds Samuel, look, and we're going to see this throughout the entire books of 1 and 2 Samuel. God chooses unassuming and what can be perceived as the weak to fulfill his purposes. And that was what Hannah's prayer was in chapter 2, verse 1 through 10. How God uses the weak to fulfill his purposes. And so God tells Samuel, reminds Samuel, look, I don't look at the outward appearance. I look at the heart. And if you remember last week, one of the indictments that God gave on Saul was he said, Saul is not a man after my own heart. And so this kind of tells us, okay, so the next king that God is going to give Israel, the king that they don't deserve, is going to be a king whose heart is after God's heart. And so we find out that Eliab isn't going to be king. And then Jesse brings his other sons, and none of them, God tells Samuel, none of them are going to be king. And so Samuel's a little kind of like wondering, like, you told me Jesse's son would be king, but none of the sons that are here are king, are going to be the king. So God, what's going on? And that moment, Samuel then asked Jesse, he says, do you have any other sons? And he says, well, I've got one other son. He's right now tending to the sheep. And that son's name is David. Now, the reason that David is not there is not because they suddenly had an emergency and they had to send David to go take care of the sheep. The reason that David is not there is because Jesse is like, there's no chance that he would be king. He's just not impressive enough. And so David is not there because he's just insignificant in the eyes of his dad and the eyes of his brother. He's the last one to be considered or to be picked to be king. And yet when they bring David before Samuel, we find that God tells Samuel to anoint David, for he will be the king of Israel. And then something significant happens in verse 13 to David. Let's read that together of chapter 16. It says this in verse 13. Then Samuel took the horn of oil. He anointed David in the midst of his brothers, and the Spirit of the Lord rushed upon David from that day forward, and Samuel rose up from Ramah. Now, what does it mean that the Spirit of the Lord rushed upon David? What is that speaking about? Well, in the Old Testament, we see this taking place where when God is using somebody for a specific purpose, it'll talk about how the Spirit rushes upon them and then they go and do that task that God has asked them to do. Oftentimes in conjunction with saving Israel from their enemies. And so this Spirit being rushed upon David is not a sign of salvation, but it's a sign that God has chosen David for this specific, unique task of being the king who will fulfill God's promises to his people, which is to provide a refuge for them and a kingdom for them. And we see juxtaposed to verse 13 and verse 14 that the Spirit of the Lord departs Saul. Look at verse 14, it says this. Now the Spirit of the Lord departed from Saul, and a harmful spirit from the Lord tormented him. And so what we see here is that even though Saul remains king, and he's going to remain king until his death, which takes place at the end of 1 Samuel, we see that in terms of as God sees the king, Saul is no longer the king. David is the true king that he has chosen. And so God's Spirit, which had come upon Saul when he was chosen to be king for the purpose of fulfilling God's purposes through Saul, which was to protect the nation of Israel from its enemies, Saul disobeyed God on two significant occasions. We saw that last week. The kingship is taken from Saul. And with the kingship being taken away, so is the Spirit of the Lord departing from Saul, because Saul is no longer in the role of king to fulfill the purposes that God has for him. And we're told as well that a harmful spirit from the Lord torments him. And I'll just give you kind of what I think this is. And I say this a little bit open-handedly, but I think it's helpful to just talk about for a minute, because everybody's like, what in the world does that mean? And so we'll just kind of hit on it. The harmful spirit from the Lord that torments him, I think, is this. First, I don't think this is a demon, because we see that this harmful spirit is from God and not from Satan. And so I don't think that this is a demon that's being spoken of here. Secondly, I think it's helpful to understand the word harmful that's used there to describe this spirit. 1 Samuel chapter 25, verse 4 uses the same word to describe badly behaved. And then 1 Samuel chapter 29, verse 7 uses it to describe to displease. And I think what is being talked about here is that this harmful spirit from God is a feeling of displeasure, a feeling of fear that internally torments Saul. And the other reason I think that is because when we look at the solution to the harmful spirit, what is it? It's calming music. So we find out that when Saul hears calming music while this harmful spirit from the Lord that torments him comes to him, it then calms him down. It quiets him down. And so that's just my idea. I could be wrong on that. But what is interesting is that this is where David enters into the story with Saul. Because as Saul experiences the torment from this harmful spirit sent from God, we find that he figures out that music is the thing that calms him. And so he asks one of the people in his court, he says, find me somebody who can play music well to bring me comfort. And they say, well, I know this kid, this youth by the name of David. He's good with a harp. And so we're going to send him to you. And so David comes into the court, Saul's court, so that he would play music to him whenever he would experience the harmful spirit from the Lord tormenting him. Now, and we see that in verse 23, and I'll read it for us. It says this, and whenever the harmful spirit from God was upon Saul, David took the lyre, played it with his hand, so that Saul was refreshed and was well, and the harmful spirit departed from him. Now, while Saul remained king, in 1 Samuel chapter 17, we're going to see that the result of the Spirit of the Lord departing from him and coming upon David, because God is going to use David to save and to rescue and to provide a refuge for his people instead of Saul. And so we don't know how much time takes place between chapter 16 and chapter 17, but when we come to chapter 17, we find that the Philistines have gathered together, and they're fighting Israel, or seeking to fight Israel in Soko. And this location is kind of in the middle between the northern part of Israel and Judea, which was the southern part of Israel. And so my guess is that the Philistines looked at the map and they said, okay, if we can split Israel in half, then we can get, it gives us an advantage. And so they gather up the battle lines, and as they gather up the battle lines, and we find that the Philistines are on one side of the battle lines and the Israel is on the other side of the battle lines, each day, or we're not told how often, but it seems like daily, there was this champion fighter from the Philistines who was super tall, who would come and kind of yell at the camp of Israel. Kids, does anybody know who the name of the champion fighter from the Philistines was? Goliath, right? Yeah, Goliath. And he's described in 1 Samuel chapter 17 as being 6 cubits in a span tall, which is probably somewhere around 9 feet tall. And so if you think about me, I'm a pretty tall guy. I'm taller than average, I would say. We would all agree on that, yes, okay? I'm taller than average. And, you know, so you just add like maybe another 6 inches to me, and that's about, no. 9 feet tall, so that's another, I'm like 5'8.5" on good days, depending on the shoes that I'm wearing, 5'9". So you're looking at least another 3+ feet taller than I am. And we're told that his armor weighed 125 pounds. And so he was a big man. We're told that the head of his spear weighed about 15 pounds. And he would come every day. We're not told if it was every day, but we're assuming it was every day. He would come to the battle line and he would yell out. And as he would yell out to the people of Israel, he would say, hey, send us your best fighter. And him and I will battle together. And then whoever wins will win the war. And the loser will become the servants to the winner. Now, how do you think Saul and his army, the Israelites, responded to Goliath's challenge? The answer is going to be here, but you want to guess before? Yeah. By running away. Let's see. Let's see what they do. Look at chapter 17, verse 10. In chapter 17, verse 10, it says this. That's the wrong verse. We'll look at here. It is in that's what Goliath was saying in verse 10. I'll read that first. And a Philistine said, I defy the ranks of Israel this day. Give me a man that we may fight together. Verse 11 is where we see Israel and Saul's response. And when Saul and all of Israel heard these words of the Philistines, they were dismayed and greatly afraid. So they didn't run away, but they wanted to run away. They're dismayed and they're greatly afraid. So their response to this challenge by Goliath is to be afraid. And that word dismayed could also be translated as shattered. They're defeated in a sense. They're greatly afraid. Now, here's the thing. This is the natural response that we will have to things that happen that we're afraid of when we look to ourselves to be our refuge. And we've seen that throughout this book. One of the challenges of Israel is they continually look to themselves to be the refuge, then God disciplines them. He then brings them back. They repent of their sin, and then God saves them as they look to God to be their refuge, and then they forget, and they go back to looking to themselves to be their refuge, and then they're afraid, and then they get into trouble again. And so when you look to yourself to be your refuge, or you look to somebody else to be your refuge, the reality is that in that moment of difficulty, in that moment of challenge, that moment of uncertainty, what you will respond when you look to yourself to be a refuge is fear and dismay. This is the natural response to that. Because you recognize that whatever it is that is coming at you is stronger or is just greater than you are. The Israelites knew they didn't have a champion fighter who was 9 feet tall who could face Goliath. And so they knew as they looked at themselves to be their refuge, as Saul looked at his army and himself to be his refuge, he knew that it was hopeless for them to defeat Goliath. Well, as this is taking place, we find David enters the story because his dad has told him to go to Israel's army because David's three oldest brothers are serving in the army. And so he says, look, I want you to go bring this food to David's brothers and to David's to your brother's commander and give me a little bit of a report of how things are going. And so David comes to the battlefront, or the battle hasn't taken place yet, but where both armies are squared off. And as he comes there, he hears this Goliath come, as he does every day, calling out this challenge to Israel. And so he hears the challenge, and this is so interesting because I want you to notice how David's response is different from Saul and the nation of Israel's response. Because what was Saul and the nation of Israel's response to the challenge by Goliath? What was their response? Yeah. They were afraid, they're dismayed, they're shattered, right? Now notice David, who's a youth, he's not a full-grown man yet. Notice his response. We'll look at verse 24 of chapter 17 through verse 26. It says this, "And all the men of Israel, when they saw the man, fled from him and were much afraid." You know what? I just realized they did run away. It tells us that the people of Israel ran away when they hear Goliath. "And the men of Israel said, 'Have you seen this man who has come up? Surely he has come up to defy Israel, and the king will enrich the man who kills him with the great riches and will give him his daughter and make his father's house free in Israel.'" Now, just as a side note, notice Saul's response. Saul's response, he's abdicating his responsibility as king, right? Because remember, who's the tallest guy in Israel? Saul is, right? Right. Saul is, right? He's the tallest. He's the king. He's the leader. He should be the one who is stepping up to the challenge of Goliath and going, okay, as God's king, I'm going to fight the battle on behalf of my nation. And yet, what does he do? He outsources the job to the highest bidder. He essentially goes, look, I don't want to do this, but if somebody else will do this, here's all the rewards that I'll give you if you can beat this guy, this champion fighter. So that's Saul's response. So he's afraid, he's outsourcing, he's abdicating his authority, his responsibility, although technically he's no longer king, but you know, he's abdicating those things. Now look at David's response in verse 26. And David, who's a youth, said to the men who stood by him, "What shall be done for the man who kills the Philistine and takes away the reproach from Israel? For who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God?" And the people answered him in the same way, "So shall it be done to the man who kills him." David's response is not a response of fear. David's response is a response of, what are we going to do about this champion fighter who is cursing the living God? Who is going to deal with this man's utter rebellion and sin against the true and living God who we serve? Now Saul hears about David, and we find that David is asking that question again. And so Saul brings David into his tent, and David says, "You know, I will go. I'm willing to go and to fight Goliath." And Saul's initial response is, "No, you can't do it. You're too small. You're just a youth. You know, it's just not going to work." But then David then tells Saul in verse 37, gives him his resume a little bit, and he says this. I'll just read I'll read verse 37 for us. It says this of chapter 17. I'll begin in verse 34. "But then David said to Saul, 'Your servant used to keep sheep for his father. And when they came, a lion or a bear, and took lamb from the flock, I went after him and I struck him and delivered it out of his mouth. And if he arose against me, I caught him by his beard and struck him and killed him. Your servant has struck down both lions and bears, and this uncircumcised Philistine shall be like one of them, for he has defied the armies of the living God.' And David said," this is really important, "'The Lord delivered me from the paw of the lion and from the paw of the bear and will deliver me from the hand of this Philistine.' And Saul said to David, 'Go, and the Lord be with you.'" Now, David tells Saul of the ways in which he has been able to kill a bear and kill a lion that attacked the sheep that he was caring for. But notice that David is not telling Saul this so that Saul is impressed by David. Because what does David then tell Saul at the end? Who does he tell Saul allowed David to kill the lion and to kill the bear? What does it say in verse 37? He says, "The Lord delivered me from the paw of the lion and from the paw of the bear." And so David, in telling Saul that, you know, he's killed this lion, that he's killed this bear, he isn't doing it to kind of be impressive. What he's doing it is he's saying, "Look, me, this youth who's small, who doesn't have a lot of, you know, I'm not impressive. I've killed a lion and I've killed a bear," which isn't reflective on me and my impressiveness, but it's reflected on God and the way in which God gave me the means or delivered these animals into my hands so that I could kill them. And then David says in verse 17, he says, "In the same way that God delivered these wild beasts into my hands, I believe that God, the one true God, will deliver Goliath into my hands in the same way." And so Saul tells him, "Go, the Lord be with you." And so David goes to fight Goliath. And we see in David's response how it's different from Saul and from the people of Israel, right? People of Israel and Saul are afraid, they're dismayed by Goliath. David, on the other hand, is willing to go and fight Goliath because he trusts the Lord of hosts to be his deliverer. And so we see, right, that we don't need to be afraid when we trust the Lord of hosts to be our deliverer. So David goes and he approaches Goliath. And remember, Goliath is a champion fighter. What that means is that his profession, his job was to fight. That's what he did. David, on the other hand, has never fought a battle. Goliath is a man. David is what? A youth. Goliath is over 9 feet tall. David, we don't know how tall he is, but he hasn't reached his full height yet. Goliath has 125 pounds of armor. David, who was offered Saul's armor to go into battle, told Saul, realized that the armor was too big, it was too cumbersome because David was too small, it didn't fit David. And so David enters the fight with no armor at all. Goliath has a sword and a massive spear. David only has a slingshot. But now I want us to notice there's one other and probably the most significant difference between Goliath and David. Goliath was a champion fighter who looked to who to be his refuge? Who did Goliath look to be his refuge? He looked to himself. Goliath looked to himself to be his refuge. He looked and he said, I am the one who will win the battle for me and for the Philistines. David, on the other hand, who did he look to be his refuge? God, the one true living God, the Lord of hosts. And this key difference is the deciding factor when they come and battle each other. Because as David comes, as a youth, unassuming, never fought a battle, isn't tall, doesn't have any armor, just has a slingshot. Goliath's response as a champion fighter is to mock David and to mock God. And he says, look, why are you coming at me like a child? I'm going to throw your body to the beasts or to the birds of the air and the beasts of the field. I'm going to just decimate and destroy you. And David's response to Goliath is so important. Look at verse 45 through 47. As Goliath mocks David and mocks God, David says this. And David said to the Philistine, you come to me with a sword and with a spear and with a javelin. Remember, because that's his refuge. Goliath looks to himself to be his refuge. So he is going to fight this battle, trusting in his spear, trusting in his sword, trusting in his javelin. But notice David. David says, but I come to you. David's refuge is not himself. It is God. I come to you with what? In the name of the Lord of hosts. And just as a side note, the Lord of hosts, God has different names, especially in the Old Testament. These names reveal to us his character, his attributes. And the Lord of hosts name is for the name of God in the context of the God who is like, he is the champion leader of the army. And so it points to God as the warrior king. He says, I come to you in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defiled. This day, the Lord, again, David is not looking to himself to be his refuge. He's saying, the Lord is going to deliver you into my hands. I will strike you down and cut off your head, and I will give the dead bodies of the hosts of the Philistines this day to the birds of the air and to the wild beasts of the earth, that all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel. And after David says this, he then takes a stone, puts it in his sling, flies the stone, and it hits Goliath right in the head, and Goliath falls over and dies. And David comes up, he cuts off Goliath's head, and in doing that, all that God said would take place takes place. And suddenly, Saul and the Israelites, who had been dismayed and greatly afraid, find courage and with a great shout rise up and pursue the Philistines. Now, at the beginning of our time together, I asked us a question. And the question was, what is your natural response to situations that invoke fear or anxiousness in you? Now, while we would like to think, as we look at, as we studied these two chapters, while we would like to think that we're like David, the reality is most often or oftentimes, when we experience things that create fear in us, we are much more like the Israelites, who are cowering in fear. And yet, what does God do? In his kindness, even as the Israelites and Saul are cowering in fear, they're dismayed. God, in his kindness, still sends a deliverer to them through David, using David to deliver them from the Philistines so that he can establish for Israel the refuge of his kingdom for his people as he had promised. And so we see God's kindness in that. But we also see here the stark contrast between those who look to God to be their refuge, as David did in this moment, or those who look to themselves to be their refuge, as Saul and the people of Israel did in this moment. Now, what allows us, when we experience fear, to trust the Lord of hosts to be our deliverer? What allowed David? Because I'm sure that as David looked at Goliath, there certainly was some fear, because Goliath was an impressive champion fighter. So what allows us, when we experience fear, to trust the Lord of hosts to be our deliverer? We are able to trust the Lord of hosts to be our deliverer when we believe the fact that God sent a deliverer who came from the line of David, but who was a better and greater David. While God used David to defeat Israel's enemy, Goliath, and to provide refuge for them, God later sent the better and greater David to defeat the greatest enemy, sin, Satan, and death. And who is that better and greater David? Yeah, Jesus, right? So Jesus comes in the line of David. Jesus, God the Son, the second person of the Trinity, who has no beginning, who has no end, steps down to earth, becomes fully man while remaining fully God, so that he can live the life that we cannot live, a life of perfection, a life of obedience, a life of righteousness. But then he also allows himself to be taken by his enemies, to be hung on the cross, so that he might be a substitute to atone for our sin, to die the death that we deserve to die. But his death isn't the last chapter in the story, is it? Because after he's buried, 3 days later, he rises from the dead, conquering sin, Satan, and death, so that these enemies no longer have power over those who trust Jesus as their Savior and Lord. And recognizing that reality allows us to, in the minutiae moments of our days and our weeks as we deal with life, to be able to, when we experience fear or anxiousness, to be able to go, okay, I don't need to look to myself to be my refuge. I can look to God to be my refuge because he has been my refuge in saving me. And we see this line of thought in Romans chapter 8, verse 31 through 32, which is one of the passages of assurance that we read this morning, where it says in Romans chapter 8, verse 31 and 32, it says, "What then shall we say to these things? If God is for us, who can be against us?" In other words, when you are experiencing the thing that you're afraid of or anxiousness, in that moment, coming back to this passage, go, what do I need to be afraid of? Because if God is for me, it doesn't matter who or what is against me. It doesn't matter who or what is what I'm afraid of, because God is for me, and God is stronger and more powerful than whatever that other thing is. But not only is God sovereign and he's more powerful, but we also see in the next verse of Romans chapter 8, verse 32, that God is both sovereign, but he is full of loving kindness and mercy, abounding in steadfast love. He says, verse 32, he who did not spare his own son, but gave him up for us all, how will he not also with him graciously give us all things? And so my encouragement to us is to daily remind ourselves of the good news of the gospel, to daily remind ourselves of the fact that if God is for us, who can be against us? Therefore, I can with confidence, in the moments of fear, in the moments of anxiousness, look to God to be my refuge, because he is sovereign. He is a great warrior. He's the Lord of hosts, but he is also my heavenly Father who graciously gave up his son so that I might be adopted into the family of God. And that is what allows us to experience what we talked about as the main idea of the sermon this morning, which was the promise that we do not need to be afraid when we trust the Lord of hosts to be our deliverer. So I just want to encourage you this week that whether it's for the first time or for the thousandth time, that when you experience difficulty, when you experience things that create fear or anxiousness in you, that you would not be afraid. Not because you've figured a way to control the thing or to escape from it or to look to somebody else to be your helper, but because you recognize that I have a deliverer in the Lord of hosts, the one true God. He is my refuge. And so I'm going to look to him to be my refuge. Who can be against me when God is for me? And that you would reflect on those things. And that reflection doesn't make the situation suddenly evaporate. It doesn't make our, you know, sometimes it can, but most often it doesn't make the fear, the anxiousness just kind of boom, just go away. But what it does do for us is it slowly produces a confidence in us that God is good, that he cares for us, that he loves us, that he is sovereign, and that he will keep us. And over time, God uses that to strengthen our faith in him and for us to be able to experience what it means for God to be our refuge. And the more we experience God being our refuge, the quicker we will find ourselves looking to God to be our refuge. And so I want to invite you towards that end this week to look to God to be your refuge, to not be afraid, for in the Lord of hosts you have a deliverer through Christ your Savior.